Coachstone Podcast.
This is my first ever podcast of Coach Stone Podcast, and we're going to talk about mainly about football. My first guest is none other than Ricky Upton from Maryville High School in Maryville, Tennessee. Ricky, are you on the phone, sir?
I'm here with you, man.
How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Hey, listen, life is awesome always, you know.
It's got to be.
You know, so... before we start, Ricky, why don't you do this? Because, you know, I'm new at this. You're probably new at this. I've been on a couple podcasts myself. But before I go through the rundown, why don't you get a little bio about yourself? So why don't you tell our audience that's listening to the first ever Coach Stone podcast a little about yourself?
All right. A little about me. I am originally from Tennessee, traveled all over as a young kid. Football was my main outlet when I traveled around. I've lived in Nashville, or Middle Tennessee. I'm originally from East Tennessee. I lived in Middle Tennessee, lived in Georgia, moved back to East Tennessee, and football is what got me an education, I got a scholarship, and I went to Penn State University, left Penn State, came back home, and the one thing that was prevalent in my life that I really wanted to do since I didn't make it to the pros was be in football, and so I became a high school coach. I coached at my alma mater for a year. I coached with my high school offense coordinator, coached with him for 2 years, and then I've been at Maryville now for 10 years. This is my 10th season at Maryville, just finished up. In the 10 years that I've been here, we've gone to 9 state championships and won 5 of them. And the year we didn't go, we went to the semifinals. So I've been very fortunate and blessed to be in the situation that I am. I got to thank George Quarles, my former head coach. He is now an offense coordinator at Furman University. I got to thank him for just believing in me and thinking that I can be an integral part in this program.
Well, thanks for that, Ricky. So to give a little rundown, the podcast will be starting to be different next time I have another guest because it's the first time, right? So you got to like work out the kinks. So
right.
The game plan of the podcast, Ricky, was the pregame. You just told us your pregame. That was you, right? Gave
right.
us a bio and everything. We're about to have the kickoff question, okay? And the kickoff question is a question that, you know, we talked about before. We talk a lot, right? We chit-chat football, family, everything, you know, from, you know, even when I'm driving or you're driving to something, we're always talking or exit or no and things like that. But let me ask you this question. How many coaches should a high school team have, and why is it hard to fill those positions?
We've actually chatted about this in our coach's office, not just last week, and we were talking, and as a staff, we believe that a high school coaching staff should consist of 12 coaches, and at Maryville, we're different from most people because all of our coaches at least coach freshmen as well, so we coach freshmen all the way through. And I know there's some people that I've talked to that are bigger programs that have a freshman staff, a JV staff, and a varsity staff. But if you're one of those that you only have a staff for everybody like us, and 12 coaches is the best part. What I've seen and the reason why it's so hard to fill is a lot of people just look for freshman coaches. Like they don't want to do anything with the freshmen, and so they just look for freshman coaches. Or every coach that comes in doesn't ever want to just coach freshmen, or just, you know, they don't want to coach freshmen. They want to be part of the varsity. And that's hard. And we've looked at schools that have more than 12 coaches and, are actually smaller than our size, and we're in the largest classification in Tennessee. When you have that many people, you have coaches that get in the way, especially with scrimmages or even on the sidelines or in the press box. And then you have a lot of people, a lot of generals and not enough soldiers, to say. Everybody's got their own agenda. And then you got to find coaches who are able to either have their niche or be willing to coach different positions. In my case, in general, I played running back in high school. I played running back in college. I was a running back coach my first 3 years of coaching. I come to Maryville, and they asked me to coach linebackers. I've never coached linebackers before. I haven't even played linebacker since my sophomore year in high school.
Yeah, but when you ran, Ricky, when you ran through linebacker,
I tried to do that. I tried to do that, and so I took the approach of how would I, as a linebacker coach, I took the approach of how would I stop a running back like myself. So I looked at running backs and I looked at their tape, and I figured out what they like to do, and so I could give my linebackers the best chance to stop in the plays. In the last 2 years, I moved from linebacker coach to defensive tackles coach. And I hadn't played defensive tackle since I was 9 years old. And so now, being 36, I'm trying to figure out, oh, what's the best way? So I look at a lot of skill and drill tapes that I found on YouTube. I try to research what the best line coaches are doing and teaching their guys, and I try to take a little bit from each one of those guys and impress it upon my athletes. Because to me, one of the best things you can do is teach a kid technique. Even if you don't know it, if you can learn the technique and impress it upon your athletes, if they can do a great job, because 90% of the battle is technique. A lot of people think football is a huge thing, like just strength and size, but I found out if you have technique, you can win most of the battles out there.
Okay. Now before we go to the first drive question, you talked about skills and drills for YouTube, and I'll get with that with the first drive question. But you talked about how some coaches are about the titles, right?
Yes.
And I'll be the first one to admit, when I was younger, titles mattered to me. I wanted to be the not the head cheese, but I wanted to be like a coordinator, things like that. With you weren't like that, it sounds like. Where you sounds like you're saying some coaches, when they try to come into a program, they're always trying to get that title or that entitlement of be that person. And how does that affect your staff if that occurs? Or that guy does not get past the fence, I would say.
Well, I mean, at first I was like that. When I was in my second year of coaching, when I left my alma mater to go and coach with my high school offensive coordinator, he's the head coach, and I thought I knew everything coming 1 year out of it, and I asked to be, can I be the offense coordinator?
Was
And
that
he
because you were
just
good at
laughed.
Madden? Were you good at Madden or no?
No, I never played Madden, but I'm great at NCAA.
Because
I'm
you
great
know
at
a lot of
NCAA.
coaches. You know a lot of coaches. Well, yeah, it'd be NCAA, right? Back then it was
Yeah.
NCAA. Because
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, I've won a national championship 5 times. I can run an offense.
Five. I got 25 national championships on my NCAA right now, so
Well, then why aren't you a head coach then, Ricky? Come on, man.
and so when I got there and I realized, oh, he said he would give me, the run coordinator and title, and that's a big thing coming out of just your second year of coaching. And then when I moved to Maryville, I just thought I automatically assumed I was going to be a running backs coach. Now, we never really talked about it. I just knew the greatest coach in East Tennessee wanted me to come and coach with him, and I was like, yeah, I'll do whatever I'm coming. I just assumed. And when I got here, he was like, you're going to coach linebackers. It was a shock to me. And so I had to check my ego at the door to be a part of the program.
Okay.
So, and it's been great. And I'll tell you this, we got a coach 2 years ago who was a former head coach and a former defensive coordinator who just wanted to come and be a part of the program that we have. And he was more comfortable with coaching linebackers. And the head coach asked me, he said, "Ricky, would you be willing to coach?" I said, "I know you've coached linebackers for 8 years, but would you be willing to coach D tackles?" And as a team, we preach sacrifice and we preach team before me. And what better way to show that you know you have a coaching staff that believes that when you have several different coaches that are willing to coach things that are not in their wheelhouse, but are willing to work at it to get better at it for the kids.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's the whistle. So the kickoff's over. So let's go with the first question, the first drive of this podcast. For the audience, just so you know, it's going to be a game plan. So typically podcasts will be like, you know, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. What I try to do with the Coach Stone podcast is, we're going to have a game plan. So the pregame is the bio, Ricky Upton, everyone from Maryville High School, D-line coach. Then we got the kickoff question we already talked about. We have the first drive question, halftime. We'll get a little commercial break, even though we have no sponsors yet, Ricky. That's a little side joke right there.
You're going to get one after this.
You know what we could do? We could promote my book or my camps. We could always do that, yeah, couldn't we?
Always.
Yeah, right? So... then we could go, next one will be a kickoff return. We'll come out at halftime with a kickoff return, second drive, and then a 2-minute warning, and then we'll do end of game. And if we have to go to overtime, we will. So great kickoff question. Now we're on the first drive question, and you already touched base on it when I asked you how many coaches. You said you should 12, but I made it. The next question goes into what you said about skills and drills, YouTube. What do you believe makes a great, like, I'm sorry, what do you believe are great D-line drills to make a D-lineman better? Like, what does a D-lineman need to be, do to be a better D-lineman?
The best thing that I found that a D-lineman can do, and this is my philosophy, and this is the philosophy I've got from watching Coach Johnson at Ohio State, and I just know him by name, but he played with his son at Penn State, but I've watched Alabama coaches do it. I've watched Auburn coaches do it, North Carolina coaches. I've watched coaches. The one thing that I found that everybody teaches is that contact separation. When you create separation between yourself and the offensive lineman, especially on run plays, it makes it so much easier for you to get off of a block and to make a play.
That's very important, isn't it, there?
It's huge. Because you'll find most people, most D linemen that don't want to create separation, and therefore they're stuck with the block. You can't get off of a block, and so therefore, and as a running back, if they're tied to a man, that's a win for an offensive lineman. I know I can get past them because they can't get off the block. But
well,
if
hey,
they're good,
oh, I'm sorry, Ricky. Remember, offensive linemen don't hold unless they're caught. So there's no holding on the offensive line, I was told.
Oh, there isn't. I remember one time our offensive line coach said he couldn't have hold. I hadn't taught him how to do that yet.
Hey, I'm just telling you what offensive line coaches tell me. They say, hey, we don't hold unless we get caught. So
I can believe it. I've never watched our offensive line coach teach how to hold. I just know people like to grab on the natural skills. But the separation, I mean, and if you want a holding call, you got to get separation. I told my guys, I don't care if their arms are wrapped around you. If you are chest to chest to them and they got their hands around your back, I don't know a referee in this state that's going to call it. So you have to create your arm length of space. And that's the number one. Number two, we play a gap defense. So the second thing I want my guys to do is to stay in their gap, to play half of a man. I coach a lot of guys who are undersized, And when I say undersized, I mean I think my biggest D tackle is 230 pounds, maybe 240 by now.
Well, we
And
don't have that up here in Illinois, just so you know.
oh,
That's
y'all
pretty
got beef
small.
up there?
No, we have a little smaller ones than that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so I tell him, I said, when you're going against a 300-pound lineman, what's the point of hitting him in his chest? I said, you can't push him that way. It's a lot easier to push half of a man than to push the whole man. And so we do a lot of punch drill, separate, and half of a man drill. Because those are the big things that you got to get done, especially if you're not going to stunt a lot as a defensive front. You have to have that separation and be able to play in your gap and move through your gap and to get off that block.
Now, those are your two things. Is there any other things that you definitely need to look for a D lineman to do for the viewers out there? Like, so they say contact separation, you're a gap defense to make sure, I like how you say it, and we talk about this all the time together on the phone when we just talk chit-chatting. It's better to attack half the person, right? Because if you just
Oh,
try
yeah.
to bull rush that person, it could turn into a sumo fight, right? So
Oh,
you're just
yes.
belly bumping. Or if the offensive lineman gets lower, or you get lower, you could be pushing that person back on roller skates. But what other things would you think a D lineman that's listening, if there is a D lineman kid listening, high school, little kid, youth kid, what is something that the D lineman kid could be doing besides, the contact separation, being gap control, half the man? Is there anything else like, with a stance or anything that you think would be? Is there like a set stance you have to be in, or do you think just tell the kids, like I tell them, just be comfortable, and just don't
I
look
tell them
like
that.
your butt up in the air.
I tell them, I mean, you want your butt up, you want a flat back. I tell we have our hand that's not down by our face mask so it can shoot straight up. But the big thing, and you touched on it, was the pad level. Every time I come out of my stance, I don't want to pop straight up and be chest to chest with that guy. I want to hit him with a rising blow. So if I'm hitting him with a rising blow, I am under him, I am under his pads, and then I make him do what I want him to do. If you stand up with a big guy, they have all control. It's, like you said, it's like a sumo wrestler, and if you've ever seen two sumo wrestlers go at it, and the great thing about sumo wrestlers is it doesn't matter the weight class sometimes. That's what I love watching that. If you see a little guy or a smaller guy in sumo versus a bigger guy in sumo, and they just go chest to chest, the bigger guy wins every time. But when you are under the pad level or the chest level, I want them to strike with the hand with their inside hand at the V of the neck and the outside hand on the outside part of the shoulder pad. When you strike that and you're low and you're half of man and you're under him, you get to push him and put him on skates, and then therefore you control where the line of scrimmage goes. So the pad level is huge, separation is huge, and then attacking half man. Those three things can win the line of scrimmage for a defensive lineman.
And that, people don't realize, we get all the running backs. I played quarterback, you played running back, the wide receivers, we get all the praise, right? But the people don't realize, even the O-line coaches do, and D-line coaches, they understand. It all comes right there. Like,
Oh, yes.
it can't happen without those people. And they say, well, the skill positions are, the offensive wide receivers, the quarterbacks, the running backs, but that's not true. Every position is a skill position.
Oh, it is.
I wrote a blog like back in March on that. If you want to, if any of my listeners that don't know, www.coachstonefootball.com, there's free blogs there and things like that. You can read up on that, but you could also find that under the blog section where it's, if it's not for those O-line and D-linemen, it's not going to happen. It's like the 7-on-7 camps. You can do great in that, but if you don't have an O line, come Friday, come in the fall, there's nothing you're going to do. You need the O line to go from there. So,
Oh, yes.
okay, Ricky, I just about the whistle's about to blow. Good, the whistle blow. Okay, so now we're at halftime. So, We're going to take a 2-minute break, Ricky, and then we're going to come back to you, okay?
That sounds good.
The Big Four, a physical education book written by Coach Anthony Stone, can be purchased through the following locations: Amazon, iTunes, BarnesandNoble.com, and Kobo.
So we're back from halftime. Ricky, it's a pleasure. Thanks for being on Coach Stone podcast again. Are you good? Did you get a water break and stuff?
Oh, I'm great. I got all the water I need.
Yes. Dehydrated, okay.
All right. So
there's something you wanted to ask me when we were on break. What was that question again?
Yeah, you were touching about the offensive line skill being a skill player and the defensive lines being skill players. I was going to ask you, did you ever do anything special for your offensive lineman?
Yes, hey. That's awesome. And what I'll do, I'll tell you what I did, and then I guarantee you probably did something too, because we're a lot alike. So when I played at Revis High School, in Burbank, I took my offensive lineman out for lunch. So, and there's some days, Jeff, my center, and Tony and all those other guys, Ben, I'm going to probably forget one and they're going to hate me for it. Lou. And, I would take them out for lunch. Right. And Jeff, mm-hmm. I remember Jeff too, but I would take them either. We would go to Old Country Buffet. And I remember I bought them one time, and I remember I bought them pizza, not pizza. I think I bought them something one time, but, they would do great for me. And I totally appreciated that, because I'll tell you that right now, if it wasn't for those guys back when I was at Revis, I wouldn't be where I'm at today with the football aspect. That makes sense. And then when I went to college at Loris, I did take my line out for every time. I did a really good job, especially when I won Wendy's MVP player of the game. I would take them out and buy them. I remember one time I was able to buy them steaks.
I think Wendy's MVP, they all get some free Wendy's, right?
Well, hey, you know what? That was funny. You win it twice, and you never got free Wendy's. I just want you to know that. I only did win it twice in my career, but I don't remember. Maybe if any other guys that played for Loris remembers that we got a Wendy's thing. I never got a discount. Maybe they just – because I transferred in, and then that's how I won them. I transferred in. I got hurt my first year, but my second year I came back, I won it twice. So if someone might have played a joke on me or something like that. but hey, enough about this right now, because I know I'm probably going to get in trouble for one of my offensive linemen at Revis or at Loris. One of my offensive linemen are going to be like, wait a second. No, you didn't do that, Stone. You have five kids yourself. You took your five kids out to lunch, not the five linemen. But why don't you tell me what you did in high school?
Well, what my dad and I did is after a 1,000-yard season, we bought the offensive lineman trophies, and I earned the nickname Baby Bull in high school. Baby Bull. It was originally Baby Angus, because
Baby
I didn't. Yeah, and I said, "What's an Angus?" And I'm a straight up non-country boy, but I live in the deep south and in country, and they were like, "An Angus is a black bull." I said, "Okay," so I took that and called myself Baby Bull, and then I earned the nickname Baby Bull. What we would do is we would buy five trophies, and the trophies were about 2.5 to 3 foot tall of horsemen.
Jeez.
And so it would have the year, how many yards we gained as, I gained with them. Because I couldn't do it without, those linemen. And then my senior year, the goal of that year was our goal was 2,000 yards rushing. And so at every 500-yard mark, my dad would cook steaks, and just the offensive linemen could come over.
Now, you said only five, though. You only had five trophies.
But five offensive linemen. Yeah. Well, no. We cooked steaks for the offensive linemen. No. The five, the starting, the ones I played with, the
got
starters.
It, got
and so the five offensive linemen, and I think my senior year I had two fullbacks. So they all got steaks. And so I remember one time one of the players said, "This is so cool. When are we going to do this again?" And my dad said, "The next time you get
my baby Angus.
The next time you guys go out and get, like, I think I was at 511 yards or something like that." And he said, "The next time you guys get, 500 yard mark, you know, when you hit 1,000, we'll do it again." My dad's like, he didn't know it was going to be the next week, because that Friday I had 409 yards rushing.
So, jeez Louise.
He said, I was going to do it fast, but I didn't want to do it this fast.
The following week. What? That's awesome. Okay, so how many trophies did your dad and you guys hand out? 15?
I think, because my first 2 years we were in split back beer. So 10 that year, and then my last year we went to I, and I was the I tailback. And so it was 7, because it was the 5 starters and the 2 fullbacks.
Okay, so how many trophies are out there in the United States of America right now, if we could find them?
If we could find them, probably 17.
17. So here we go, listeners. Ricky, you got to do me a favor and tell your wife, too. Share this thing when this thing gets published, or once we get on the air here for this thing. I want to see at least 10 old baby bull trophies handed out. Horses, you said, right?
Yeah, they were horsemen.
Yeah, we got to see if we can find 10 horses for you. So, because I still have my trophies when I was younger, and that'd be cool. Yeah. Like, I still have a book where my linemen and my whole team from my junior and senior year in high school, they signed it, and I keep it in a book locked up, so even, like, can't get wet or nothing, and it's sealed. Where they all autographed it one day before a dinner, and I still cherish that. And now it's framed up on my wall behind my thing. I've taken a picture before and posted it on Facebook and social media, but I mean, it's something where I will cherish forever, because if it wasn't for those men helping me out to be a better athlete, like I said, I wouldn't be where I'm at today with football.
Oh, with that, yeah,
that's a great thing. Now let's go to. We had our kickoff. We had our first drive. We had a halftime. We did a little extra halftime. We had the marching band and everything going earlier when we hit halftime, because when I said I hit halftime, the marching band was going. Let's do the kickoff return, because we got the ball now.
Okay? All right.
All right. So this is the biggest thing, and I know we talked about this every day. Like not every day, but when we talk about it. Today's athlete, right?
Mm-hmm. And
not like they used to be with you and I, because we were born differently, right? We didn't have water breaks. We did. I remember two-a-days. I remember six-a-days and four-a-days. You know, now we're like not even doing two-a-days, I don't think, anymore. If we do, it's barely anything. What's different besides the social media and everything? You know, that's something we could win a Nobel Peace Prize on. Social media has really changed, and that's for a future podcast. But today's athlete, how do you motivate those players today? Then, like, you started. How many years did you start coaching again?
13. I've been coaching for 13 years.
13. So the kids have changed in 13 years, right? Let's say
oh,
they
yes.
I don't know if you, yeah.
Oh, they've changed a lot in 13 years.
So let's go with this first. 13 years ago, for today's athlete, what's the difference for motivation factors? Go into that, motivation.
I think 13 years ago, it was more, and again, this is before, like, you know, a lot of social media. It was more, you did it. Because the athletes I coach were doing it to try to find a way out of a situation. They wanted to go to college for some reason, or it was at Jefferson County when I was coach there my first year. That was a culturalistic thing. I remember they wanted to break up the school because the school was getting overcrowded, and they wanted to break up the school, and they're like, "No, we're not going to do this." And the sole reason they weren't going to break up the school is because they didn't want to have two football teams in that county. So I mean, it is a very culturalistic thing. So you grew up loving football. It was Monday nights for freshman football, Tuesday nights for middle school football, Wednesday was church, Thursday nights were Monday nights were JV football, Tuesdays middle school football, Thursdays were freshman football, Fridays varsity, Saturdays were peewees, and then Sundays were for the NFL. So, I mean, you had one day off, and that was Wednesday night. It was football all around the clock. And
Wednesday was church day.
Wednesday was church day.
Church was a Wednesday. Okay, yes. So that was those athletes. So today's athletes, right? You know, with me coaching at the high school and stuff, you know, you coach your kids. I coach my kids. Okay, what about today's guy? You know, today's athlete. How do you motivate that? Like, tell our viewers how you do it. So if there's something that you say right now, they can write it down. Like, I'm writing down little notes for me because I got my three little things to make a good defensive lineman ready to go. Give me something that the viewers can hear. Hey, today's athlete, you're coaching this athlete. This is how I motivate them. Maybe it works for you.
All right. The number one thing that works for me is I develop a relationship with them. You have to develop a relationship with today's athlete because if they feel like you can't be trusted or you're fake, they don't care what you say. And I've had athletes tell me that, you know, I don't – when other coaches yell at me, they don't listen just because they are never around them. They don't really have a strong relationship with them. But when I yell at them, they can pay attention. And then I can't yell at every athlete. Because some athletes, you yell at them and they'll buckle.
Like a turtle, right? They go into their shell, right? And those can be the tough ones, right?
It can be the tough ones. It can be the not-so-tough ones. Other athletes, you yell at them and they thrive. I remember after we played one game this year, and I think we gave up the most rushing yards we've given up in a long time. And, you know, I took it to heart with my D-tackles, and I was really upset with my D-tackles. And I just yelled at all of them. And then I had a mom call me because she was concerned because her son – we won the game, but her son was crying after the game because he knew he didn't play well. And I had to talk to him and say, I know the effort that you give is you give it your all. And I said, I'm not disappointed in your effort. I'm disappointed in, you know, we weren't able to achieve what we wanted to achieve. And so I had to pull him aside and talk to him. I've had another athlete this year who I yelled at, and he's just not responding to the yelling. And so I pulled him aside and I talked to him. I said, what's going on? And he just cried on my shoulder for a little bit and told me about some family issues he was having. And so I just had to hug him and tell him that I'm here for him no matter what. He can always call me. He can always come by my house. And that's how I motivated him. I had another tackle this year who he's got athletic ability, but he just makes he makes mistakes that are costly at times, like getting personal foul penalties. And it's not that he's malicious in trying to get a personal foul penalty. He just is the second one to get caught when somebody's hitting him, and you know, and he pushes back. He gets that penalty. And so there's a couple of games this year that he got pulled out for the rest of the game, and I just had to tell him. I said, playing these type of teams was not your strong suit this year. I said, but I'm going to stick with you. I'm going to keep coaching you, and I promise you, we're going to find the team that you fit in. And this kid ends up playing most of the state championship game when he hadn't really played in what maybe won the two series, the semifinal game and the quarterfinal game. He plays I only rotate three defensive tackles, and he's one of those three. And he plays for three quarters in the state championship game. So it's constantly motivating. You know, I know where your strong suits are at. I'm going to find a way to put you in your strong suit. It's knowing those relationships, knowing when a kid needs to be yelled at, knowing when a kid needs to be hugged, knowing when a kid and there's a lot of times I make mistakes too, and then being able to say, I messed up. You did what you were supposed to. That is my fault. Well, I think when kids see that, they know you're real. They know you want what's best for them, and then they're easily motivated. I think a lot of times kids feel like their coaches are just out for them, for themselves. They just want to know they want their winning record, and they want their state championship. I don't feel like – I feel like I need to put my athletes in front of me.
Well, that's great. Ricky, thank you very much for that answer. We just got the whistle. Okay, so now the next question, okay? So, you know, it sounds like, you know, relationships and things like that, you know, and you motivate them. And, like, we were talking about a turtle, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have those turtles and you have those kids that big bad ones and things like that. The follow-up question for the second drive question is this. What holds today's athlete back from playing their best? You know, because 13 years ago, listen, if I was coaching a kid 13 years ago, I can just say, hey, go do this, and they go do it. Nowadays, and I don't know if you get this, but some days I get, I got you, coach, I got you. Or you do it wrong, and they do it wrong over and over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and I'm not going to run a kid. Like, I don't know if you remember the old school when we played? You know, if I got something wrong, Coach Stone, you got something wrong, great, go run a lap. Well, when I come back and run that lap, they're going to ask me the exact same question. Well, one, I'm not a marathon runner, right? So, I was never a marathon runner in the first place, right? But when I come back, two things are going to happen. One, I'm going to be pissed off at the coach. Two, I'm going to be upset. And three, I still don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm going to miss about four or five reps at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know the old school version of, you know, coaches doing this and, you know, with my camps that I do with the Back to the Basics, you know, it's not about, you know, like making the kids run laps. You know, it's about teaching them teachable moments like you were talking about earlier. But, you know, what holds a player, today's athlete, back from being their best? What do you think it is?
All right. Well, first, the only punishment I give my guys is if they jump off sides. And then it's five up downs. But I don't take them out to do those five up downs because we rotate in practice. So after they come out of their series of their, you know, they get their reps that they owe me or that, you know, that they're given. And then they come out and they do five up downs. Or if they jump off sides twice, they do 10 up downs. Or if they're a nose guard, they do 10 up downs. So that's the only time, that's the only type of punishment I do. A lot of times I feel like what holds people back is when we played, it was your coach was the know all be all. So, you know, when the coach told you something, you did what the coach said. I remember my dad telling me, he said, if I want you to do something, all I got to do is tell your coach and you will do it because you won't mm-hmm. listen to me. I think now you have parents that think they know more than the coach. You have outside sources that think they know more than the coach. There are a lot of down south, there are a lot of recruiting services that think they know more than the coach. So you have a lot of outside sources telling you how great you are, how great you can be. And then you have a coach, and the coach's literal job is to break you down, to build you back up. It's kind of like the army. You know, it's an army of one. You have to mm-hmm. break a person of being selfish to make them selfless. And then you have all these outside sources telling you, no, be selfish. You got to get yours. It's all about you. And so when you have all those outside sources coming at you, and then you only have one source telling you it's got to be about the team, it's got to be about the team, it's harder to motivate the kid, especially if you got somebody like when I tell people I tell our guys, do your job. That's all you got to do. If you do your part in this play, we succeed. Like if you look at
I think Dobo Sweeney said it best. Do your job. You know, I got to hear him speak in March. My wife and another coach surprised me with a little gift, and I was able to go down to Clemson, listen to Dobo Sweeney speak. It's pretty amazing. He just says, you know what, do your job. If not, next man up. You know, do your job. And I think that, like you're saying, do your job. With today's athlete, I think, like you said it perfectly, like the entitlement and stuff. You know, 13 years ago, we didn't have that. I don't think social media was huge 13 years ago.
No.
You know, and especially when we played, I mean, I don't know about you, but my highlights tapes are still on VHS. I don't know if yours are. But my,
mine are on VHS.
Yeah, my and then, you know, my son asks, hey, Dad, can I see you play? And I'm like, yeah, you want to pop the VCR out? He's like, what's that? And then I put it out. It looks like he says, oh, it's a toaster. And I'm like, no, that, son, that's a VCR. So, but, yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, because the kids don't realize what they want to do. And then they see things on TV or other kids do it in a real game, and they want to mimic it. Or if they see naughty things or bad things happen, then, I don't know, it just makes the game more not as lovable as it was 10, 5, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's tainted. It becomes tainted. And, I mean, and that was the hardest thing. And I give we had a first-year coach this year, 28 years old, first-year coach, first-year head coach. He's been with us for 5 years. And I give him credit because after every practice, what he preached was be selfless. You got to put the team before me. And that was a big thing. You get, like, if you get – like for us playing a gap defense, and if we stunt and our tackles are going in one gap and the linebackers in the same gap as the tackle, and we had an end looking the same gap as the tackle, we got three guys in one gap, and there's two other gaps open on that on the weak side, and we gotta, all right, here's a part where we're not doing our job, so we gotta look and see who's not doing what they're supposed to do. And sometimes it's conversation about that. It's got to be about your job. You got to be your cog in the watch or the clock. That's what makes it go. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of times people see athletes try to do everything, and they feel like they can do everything, but they don't really realize that, you know, even when you're watching the pro athletes or, you know, top-notch NCAA athletes, they couldn't do what they did if it wasn't for other people doing their jobs. There is not one single player that can take on 11 other people.
I don't care what anybody says. 1 versus 11, not going to happen. Just like a quarterback cannot win a game without those skill offensive line positions. You know,
oh, yes.
Running back can't run. Baby bull in the backfield, can't get through the line if there's no one blocking for him. But, yeah, okay, that's a great segue. Let's whistle's about to blow. That ends the second drive. Now we're down to a 2-minute warning. We're almost done, Ricky. I hope you're not upset. Maybe we could stay longer, maybe do one overtime question. But for our 2-minute warning, one of the questions I want to ask you is this. We both have great coaches' wives. We both have, you know, both have kids. I mean, we can almost make a football team with all our kids, right?
Yeah.
So what's it like, you know, do you coach your child?
I coached both of them on a flag football team this year.
Flag football. Okay. So, and with that being said, how is it like? What's it like? Because, you know, myself, you know, just give a little about me. I coach my son's flag football team. I love it to death. It's phenomenal. Wouldn't trade it for the world. I've coached two of my daughters in soccer. Hopefully the next one coming up. And then the other one that's, you know, just a newborn, she'll play sports. Hopefully one of the girls, if they want to, play women's professional tackle. That'd be great. But, you know, tell me how it is. You know, I said it in one podcast, it's priceless, but let the viewers hear from you. What do you think about coaching your child? The positives, negatives, takeaways, and all that stuff. Go ahead.
Well, I'll be quite honest. I never wanted to coach my children. Never. And the reason is I was afraid that I would be too tough on them. I love being around my kids, and I love being a dad, and I've never wanted to be that dad who is yelling and screaming at their child. I hate parents that do that. And when I'm at games, I try my best to move away from the crowd so I can just enjoy watching my child play. That being said, this year, I have a son from a previous relationship, and his stepdad chose to be the head coach of his flag football team and needed an assistant coach. And I told him if he needed an assistant coach, I would do it. And so my son.
Wait, what was your title? What was your title? Were you OCDC assistant head? What was it?
You call me associate head coach, but I like saying I was director of parent complaints and I was the parent liaison.
Hey, listen, isn't that funny how when they get us to volunteer, like, you know, guy up in Rockford, he does an excellent job with the flag program with the Rockford Park District. And I love it because whenever he goes, hey, you're going to coach your son, right? I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, or whatever, you know. But it's like I'm the parent complaint, right? They come to me first because if there's an assistant with us, they don't go to them. They always come to me to complain because I'm already a coach. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So we're already used to it, right?
Oh, yes. Definitely. And then my daughter, this is my son's last year playing in 6 to 8 year olds. And so my 6-year-old daughter said that she wanted to play with her brother for 1 year.
That's awesome.
And so we put her in flag to play with her brother. And seeing my son who's played flag 2 years, watching him grow from he caught one ball all of last year, he played center all of last year, to seeing him be a part of, I mean, and we lost every game but one, but to see him be a part of and grow something, he was the positive kid on the team. He ended up having 2 interceptions. Again, a kid that only caught one ball all of last year on offense and wouldn't chase anybody down, ended up having 2 interceptions and 1 returned for a touchdown.
There you go.
That was amazing, I was very proud of him. But also seeing my daughter being a 6-year-old on the team, she played backup quarterback and she played linebacker. Seeing her run after and just smile, like she missed a lot of flag pulling opportunities, but she had the biggest smile just being on the field. They were trying to get her to throw a touchdown to her brother, and she's ended up throwing a couple of threw one interception and another incomplete pass. But she was just proud of the moment that as a girl and as a 6-year-old, she was out there competing, and that's what I love seeing. So as a coach of my children this year, and especially of that age 6, 7, and 8 years old, I realized I can pull back the reins. Like, I can just let go. I can let go a little bit and just let them enjoy this age because they're never going to be this age again. I don't think there's ever going to be a time my daughter wants to play flag football again. She told me the other day she doesn't like getting hot and sweaty, so she's done with that.
Now, was she a cheerleader before, or did she just
she was she loves the air conditioning, so she can cheer in the air conditioning.
You know, you really got to get you a cheerleading coach. That's what you got to do, Ricky, next year. Coach your daughter's cheerleading team.
Oh no! I practiced her cheers with her now. Don't get it twisted. I'm that dad you saw in the commercial.
We're gonna have to put that on the bottom of the comment when they post this. I want to see a little picture of you practicing that. You know, so it could be the Ricky Upton challenge. You know how the ice bucket challenge,
We'll do that cheer
Upton challenge. The dancing daughter challenge, because like I said before, you know, I hope my younger daughters and, you know, even my oldest daughter that I have, I would hope they play football. I mean, I'm not going to force them. And I think you didn't say this, but we didn't force our kids to play.
Oh,
you
no.
Know, where some parents want to push it on them, So when they do get to high school or something, they're like, I'm done. Or when I'm done with high school, I'm like, I'm done. Or I'm burned out because I'm playing football all year round. Or I'm playing this all year round. 3-sport athletes is huge. I know that's for a different conversation. And hopefully, Ricky, you'd like to come back to the Coach Stone podcast for another guest appearance. You know, I'd love to have you. But that's the end of our 2-minute warning. The end of the game is about to hit. So, boom, there's the end of the game buzzard. I want to thank Ricky. I want to thank you. I want to thank your wife, you know, for letting me borrow you for an hour. I know my wife is probably like, where's he at? He's hidden away, you know. The kids are probably running around hectic, you know, but hey, thank you very much for coming to the show. I appreciate it. everyone, make sure you go to JC Radio, JCHawkRadio.com to listen to future podcasts. Our next guest will be announced shortly once this show is posted. The next guest will be also announced. Anything, Ricky, listen, with the 2-minute warning, you know, I usually do 2 minutes. You got, I know we're in overtime now, so I apologize for doing this, but this is your overtime. Do you want to say anything to the listening audience about anything we talked about, or you want to leave us with some kind of thing, and I'll say goodbye to the audience then?
Well, first, I want to thank you for having me on the show, and I actually want to thank my wife, Tina. We've been out and riding around, and she has been driving me around and been, like, she's been mouse quiet the whole time, and I got to thank my kids, Christian and Destiny, who have decided to fall asleep while we ride around in the dark and not yell and scream at each other, because they've been awesome. Again, the biggest thing I can stress to a listener is, especially a coach, is to have relationships with your kids. Know what's the best part about them, know what's the worst part about them. Those are the biggest relationship things that, you know, that helps you with your children, with your kids, your coach. And I also got to thank my wife for one more thing. Wednesdays during the season, we have close to 20 boys. It doesn't matter what position you play. Come over the house, and my wife cooks a meal for them every Wednesday. And this past year, it was 15 weeks. She cooks a meal for them. We don't ask for them to bring money or anything. We just ask for them to bring themselves. And my wife does. She plans the meals, and she makes the meals all by herself. And I know I couldn't have half the relationships I have without her.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you, Ricky. Appreciate it. Tell your wife I said hi again, like I always do when we talk. But that's Back to the Basics. It's Coach Stone's podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening. See you later, everybody. See you in a couple weeks.
Coach Stone Podcast. Okay.